Welcome to I'm Not Supposed to Be Here, the podcast. Chapter 9.
And we're picking up right where Eddie's story left off, brimming with anticipation for what unfolds next in his life.
In this episode, Eddie's diary entry begins with a bombshell. Elvis, his bandmate, confidant, and friend, is leaving Toki Dikita. He and his wife are expecting another child, and he's decided he can't raise his children on the road.
This news hits Eddie hard. He understands Elvis's reasons, acknowledging his friend's commitment to family. Yet as a band member, he feels abandoned. He started Toki Dikita with four members, and now he's down to one, himself.
It's a turning point. A moment of profound vulnerability for Eddie. He's facing the daunting prospect of carrying the weight of their shared musical dreams alone. He expresses his feelings of being adrift, using the familiar refrain, "This is not how things are supposed to be. I'm not supposed to be here."
It's a raw, honest expression of his inner turmoil. He recognizes the recurring pattern of things going well, only to be disrupted by unexpected setbacks. Yet, this time feels different. The disappointment more profound.
The final performance with Elvis in Greece is bittersweet, filled with memories of their shared journey. The highs, the lows, the incredible accomplishments. Eddie expresses his gratitude for Elvis's partnership, acknowledging the honor of sharing the stage with him.
And just like that, Toki Dikita becomes a solo act. Eddie reflects on the whirlwind of experiences, challenges, and personal growth he's undergone, particularly since Elvis's departure. He describes himself frankly, admitting to weight gain, inactivity, and a lack of creative inspiration. He's seeking comfort, surrounding himself with people, places, and things that bring him joy and tranquility.
He recognizes the need to regain his sense of purpose, spurred by the upcoming tour, his first without Elvis. He acknowledges the strangeness of this new reality, the absence of the familiar presence beside him on stage.
He recalls their shared history, their bond forged through 15 years of working together, creating Toki Dikita, and their TV show, experiencing the world side by side. They've become family.
But Eddie also understands Elvis's longing for a stable family life and wishes him well. With renewed determination, he focuses on preparing for Toki Dikita's biggest tour yet.
One of the challenges he faces is promoting Toki Dikita as a solo act. He's so accustomed to referring to them as a band that he often forgets he's now performing alone. This creates a disconnect in interviews where he's constantly introduced as Toki Dikita, the band from Miami.
He reflects on the brutal year he's had, acknowledging the irony of his pursuit of comfort leading to perpetual obligations. He describes himself as a nomad, forever on the road.
And then comes the momentous performance in Russia. He describes the cold, rainy night in St. Petersburg, the anticipation of performing at the sold-out Aurora Concert Hall, a prestigious venue in the city.
He recalls his father's doubts, the predictions of failure, and feels a sense of triumph at having defied the odds. He's determined to make the most of this opportunity to achieve even greater things.
The moment he steps on stage, the crowd erupts, singing along to every word. He's overwhelmed by the connection he feels with the audience, a bridge spanning continents, cultures, and languages.
Then, an hour into the show, a man rushes the stage, waving his arms frantically. Eddie's initial reaction is a mixture of hesitation and caution. He's uncertain of the man's intentions.
The man reaches for the microphone, and Eddie instinctively pulls it away. The man's expression changes, and he pulls out a badge. Other people join him on stage, not to restrain him, but in support. Eddie realizes these are officials.
He hands over the microphone, and the official begins speaking in Russian. Eddie doesn't understand, but his tour manager gestures for them to leave the stage. The backstage area is chaotic.
Eddie is taken to a separate room, where a translator explains the situation. The Russian authorities disapprove of his messages about freedom of speech and expression.
Eddie's fear is palpable. He doesn't want to become an American imprisoned in Russia for expressing his views. His tour manager attempts to reason with the officer, while the concert promoter frantically paces in and out, shouting in Russian.
Two Russian officers begin arguing amongst themselves, adding to the confusion. Eddie's girlfriend stands anxiously in the hallway.
He pleads with the officers to spare the audience from punishment, begging to finish the concert before facing any charges. But his pleas seem to fall on deaf ears. Suddenly, everyone leaves the room, leaving Eddie alone.
He looks out the window at St. Petersburg, reflecting on the surreal situation he finds himself in. He hears the crowd chanting his name, and a man speaking in Russian over the microphone trying to calm them.
The thought of spending even a single night in a Russian prison is daunting. He feels a mix of rebellion and fear, acknowledging the fragility of the freedoms he's taken for granted.
Then the mood shifts. His tour manager returns, accompanied by the concert promoter and a local politician. The concert promoter delivers good news. Toki D. Keita will be allowed to continue. The relief is immense.
Eddie returns to the stage, and the performance is electrifying. He feels like an ambassador of music, sharing a historic moment with the Russian audience. He expresses his disdain for the Russian government, but emphasizes his love for the Russian people.
Backstage, the atmosphere is celebratory, filled with the joy of a successful and historic performance. Eddie expresses gratitude for his team, his girlfriend, and his band, acknowledging their unwavering support and dedication.
The next morning, they explore St. Petersburg, visiting iconic landmarks like the Winter Palace and the Church of the Savior on Spilled Blood. He appreciates the opportunity to immerse himself in the city's history and culture.
But then, on the way back to the hotel, he and Steph have a major argument about having children. Steph doesn't want them, citing the sacrifices her sister made as a young mother.
Eddie tries to understand her perspective, but he's also hurt and feels personally rejected. He questions why she wouldn't want children with him specifically. He goes through a range of emotions, heartbreak, insult, anger, before settling into a defiant, almost childish stance.
He declares that if she doesn't want children, he wants them even less. If she doesn't want them with him, he doesn't want them with her even more so. He admits the pain of realizing he's married the only woman he's ever met who doesn't want children, and worse, doesn't want them with him.
They eventually make up, but the underlying tension remains, leaving Eddie with lingering feelings of hurt and uncertainty.
And that, Sophia, is where we leave Eddie's story for this episode. What a roller coaster of emotions. From the high of performing in Russia to the low of a painful argument with his wife.
It's certainly a lot to unpack. What do you think, listeners? Was Eddie right to feel abandoned by Elvis? How would you handle the pressure of performing in a country where your message of freedom of expression is not welcomed? And what about the argument with Steph? Is her fear of parenthood valid? Is Eddie's reaction justified?
So many questions and so much to ponder. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Join us for the next episode as we continue to delve into Eddie's journey.
And don't forget to follow, share, and subscribe to I'm Not Supposed to Be Here, the podcast. You can also watch the award-winning docuseries on Tubi and listen to the audiobook and soundtrack of the motion picture I'm Not Supposed to Be Here. And visit imnotsupposedtobehere.com and tokedekeda.com. And most importantly, join us next time to discover whether Eddie's dream will finally become a reality.